Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine this. You're stranded on an island forever. But don't freak out because you get to bring one dish with you. Your desert island dish. What is it?
Every week your hosts, Paul and Tegan, that's us.
Hello.
Hello, we'll ask this question. They'll chat with and torment a literal raft of guests on the island who'll dish up stories, gossip and culinary secrets.
But they all have one big thing in common. They bloody love food.
Welcome to Dish Island. Hello and welcome to Dish Island. I'm Paul.
Hello and I'm Tegan.
Tegan, how are you feeling this week?
Anxious, Paul.
Why?
I'm feeling anxious. Well, because after being in lockdown for so long, I mean, Melbourne has now officially been in lockdown more than any other place on earth.
Yeah.
There is light at the end of the tunnel. The roadmap to freedom has been set by Dan Andrews. We're going to head back out and meet people and talk and shop and do all those normal things again. And it's making me anxious.
Are you not excited about eating, though?
Of course I'm excited about eating, Paul. God, do you even know who I am?
The first thing we did was book. We literally sat down and we looked through all the restaurants we've been fantasizing about and have tried to book in different slots.
Yeah.
But because they haven't been open in so long, I think they're sort of taking the... It's like going to a... Have you ever been skiing, Tegan?
Once, and it didn't go very well.
No, likewise. But you'll go to a kind of like a cafe on the middle of a mountain in a ski area, and they'll be charging $17 for hot dogs. That's the kind of vibe I'm getting right now.
Oh, look, I cannot blame the restaurants for wanting to gouge us ever so slightly, because if they're feeling anything like I am, it's understandable. I've got this strange mixture of FOMO meets fear that we're going to have like 3 days of freedom and then COVID's going to spike and Dan Andrews is going to put us back into lockdown again.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we're trying to make plans for Christmas. We just want to see your family for Christmas. And even that, we're just over 2 months away.
Mm.
And even that is difficult. We're trying to book things in. It's like, I don't know. Could all get cancelled. Will we get our money back? I don't know.
Probably not. You made a comparison as to how this actually feels to you recently.
Okay. Yes, I did. All right. So you know that scene in a horror film where the woman has been trapped, she's been captured, bound, tied, bloodied. It's horrible. It's actually the sort of film I don't like to watch. And the guy that has her trapped finally leaves the shack or house or garage, whatever it is.
Right, so he's like, I'm going down to get some, don't you try and escape.
Exactly. He's probably driving some sort of
pickup.
Dusty red pickup truck. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
She hears the truck fading into the distance and she tests the binds around her wrist and she's like, oh my God, I can get free. So she does. She breaks free of the house. It's probably nighttime, so she tiptoes outside. She's surrounded by forest. She runs through the forest and the twigs are lashing at her face, little cuts across her cheeks. And then she finally makes it to this deserted highway. Now, at this point, watching the film, you're like, stay in the f***ing bushes. Oh my God, stay in the bushes.
Yeah.
Because what happens next is a pair of headlights coast over the horizon heading towards her.
Mm.
And because she's an idiot, she's like, help me, help me. I've been trapped by a bad guy. Help me. And she runs towards the headlights.
Yeah.
And as the car draws closer, you see the familiar shape of the dusty red pickup. But she doesn't know this. And she's like, oh, thank God I'm safe. The pickup pulls up and it's him. But it's not him because in my version, it's COVID.
Right.
And just when you think you're safe and you've run for the highway and you're waving down freedom, no, it's another pandemic.
Yeah, I don't think Dan's going to be giving that metaphor of the presser anytime soon. But it's completely on point. For me, it's the sheriff. It's a cop. And you're like, oh, thank God. And then he stops at a gas station and he goes to the payphone and he's like, I got her. And he brings her back.
Oh, that's right. Because they're driving towards the town and then all of a sudden he clicks on his indicator and he does a U-turn. She's like, where are we going, sheriff? I thought you were taking me back to the station for processing. And he's like, you just now keep quiet there, little lady, because I'm taking you back to COVID.
Oh, my God.
Oh, golly. Look, that is one film that I don't want to watch and I certainly don't want to live. But, Paul, our guest today is somebody who has relived some of the worst films of all time again and again and again.
Yeah, that's right. Today's guest is the co-host of the groundbreaking and, like you said, utterly exhausting worldwide phenomenon that is called The Worst Idea of All Time, which is a podcast where basically him and his friend Guy sit down and watch the same film over and over and over and over and over. It's amazing. And it's become a global hit. He's also a prolific and celebrated stand-up comedian, and he's one of the nicest guys I've ever had the pleasure of spending a night in a hotel room with.
Hello.
It's a long story. Please welcome Tim Batt.
Imagine this. You're stranded on an island forever. But don't freak out because you get to bring one dish with you, your desert island dish. What is it?
Every week, your hosts, Paul and Tegan, that's us.
Hello.
Hello. We'll ask this question. They'll chat with and torment a literal raft of guests on the island who'll dish up stories, gossip, and culinary secrets.
But they all have one big thing in common. They bloody love food.
Welcome to Dish Island. Hello and welcome to Dish Island. I'm Paul.
Hello and I'm Tegan.
Tegan, how are you feeling this week?
Anxious, Paul.
Why?
I'm feeling anxious. Well, because after being in lockdown for so long, I mean, Melbourne has now officially been in lockdown more than any other place on earth.
Yeah.
There is light at the end of the tunnel. The roadmap to freedom has been set by Dan Andrews. We're going to head back out and meet people and talk and shop and do all those normal things again. And it's making me anxious.
Are you not excited about eating, though?
Of course I'm excited about eating, Paul. God, do you even know who I am?
The first thing we did was book. We literally sat down and we looked through all the restaurants we've been fantasizing about. And have tried to book in different slots.
Yeah.
But because they haven't been open in so long, I think they're sort of taking the... It's like going to a... Have you ever been skiing, Tegan?
Once, and it didn't go very well.
No, likewise. But you'll go to a kind of like a cafe on the middle of a mountain in a ski area, and they'll be charging $17 for hot dogs. That's the kind of vibe I'm getting right now.
Oh, look, I cannot blame the restaurants for wanting to gouge us ever so slightly, because if they're feeling anything like I am, it's understandable. I've got this strange mixture of FOMO meets fear that we're going to have like 3 days of freedom and then COVID's going to spike and Dan Andrews is going to put us back into lockdown again.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we're trying to make plans for Christmas. We just want to see your family for Christmas. And even that, we're just over 2 months away.
Mm.
And even that is difficult. We're trying to book things in. It's like, I don't know. It could all get cancelled. Will we get our money back? I don't know.
Probably not. You made a comparison as to how this actually feels to you recently.
Okay. Yes, I did. All right. So you know that scene in a horror film where the woman has been trapped, she's been captured, bound, tied, bloodied. It's horrible. It's actually the sort of film I don't like to watch. And the guy that has her trapped finally leaves the shack or house or garage, whatever it is.
Right, so he's like, I'm going down to get some, don't you try and escape.
Exactly. He's probably driving some sort of
pickup.
Dusty red pickup truck. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
She hears the truck fading into the distance and she tests the binds around her wrist and she's like, oh my God, I can get free. So she does. She breaks free of the house. It's probably nighttime, so she tiptoes outside. She's surrounded by forest. She runs through the forest and the twigs are lashing at her face, little cuts across her cheeks. And then she finally makes it to this deserted highway. Now, at this point, watching the film, you're like, stay in the f***ing bushes. Oh my God, stay in the bushes.
Yeah.
Because what happens next is a pair of headlights coast over the horizon heading towards her.
Mm.
And because she's an idiot, she's like, help me, help me. I've been trapped by a bad guy. Help me. She runs towards the headlights.
Yeah.
And as the car draws closer, you see the familiar shape of the dusty red pickup. But she doesn't know this. And she's like, oh, thank God I'm safe. The pickup pulls up and it's him. But it's not him because in my version, it's COVID.
Right.
And just when you think you're safe and you've run for the highway and you're waving down freedom, no, it's another pandemic.
Yeah, I don't think Dan's going to be giving that metaphor of the presser anytime soon. But it's completely on point. For me, it's the sheriff. It's a cop. And you're like, oh, thank God. And then he stops at a gas station and he goes to the payphone and he's like, I got her. And he brings her back.
Oh, that's right. Because they're driving towards the town and then all of a sudden he clicks on his indicator and he does a U-turn. She's like, where are we going, sheriff? I thought you were taking me back to the station for processing. And he's like, you just now keep quiet there, little lady, because I'm taking you back to COVID.
Oh, my God.
Oh, golly. Look, that is one film that I don't want to watch and I certainly don't want to live. But Paul, our guest today is somebody who has relived some of the worst films of all time again and again and again.
Yeah, that's right. Today's guest is the co-host of the groundbreaking and, like you said, utterly exhausting worldwide phenomenon that is called The Worst Idea of All Time, which is a podcast where basically him and his friend Guy sit down and watch the same film over and over and over and over and over. It's amazing. And it's become a global hit. He's also a prolific and celebrated stand-up comedian and is one of the nicest guys I've ever had the pleasure of spending a night in a hotel room with.
Hello.
It's a long story. Please welcome Tim Batt. Tim, welcome to our horrible, terrible, magical, no good island. Obviously, we like to ask our guests first off how they got here because the means of conveyance varies from guest to guest. I know that Darren Hayes basically farted his way across the South Pacific to get here.
I love that that's how you interpreted it, but sure, Darren Hayes farted himself here.
Yeah. Big explosive fart. Some people come by boat, paraglider. My dad sort of, he claims he walked, which doesn't make any sense. How did you get here?
Fun story, you two. It was by blimp, airship.
Huh.
Sort of an old Zeppelin-y looking thing. I've always had a fondness for airships and airship travel, mainly in sort of pop culture because I haven't been around a lot of them before. But I managed to get my hands on a blimp ride in New Zealand and was quickly familiarized with why they're not more popular. A gust sort of took it away and had its wicked way with us, the small crew on board.
So where's the rest of the crew?
Well, I was the only survivor, Paul.
Golly.
Oh.
Well, this is a tragedy. I mean, it is lovely to have you here, but how many fatalities are we talking here?
Just three.
Just the three.
They were real baddies.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Swindlers, tax dodgers, philanderers.
Anti-vaxxers?
Very pro-vax, all three of them. So they did have that going in their favour, and they were all, they'd had both Pfizer shots.
Right, so you haven't brought the virus to the island, basically, is what you're saying?
No, definitely not, which I think is very important. I think that's crucial.
I haven't thought about blimps in a while, which is a shame, really.
Hang on, blimp, zeppelin, are we talking like an Oz style?
No, that's the Duff blimp from The Simpsons.
Oh, right, like a little propeller up the back of the thing.
Yeah,
right.
And there used to be one that would fly over my area in Dandenong.
The Goodyear blimp, right?
No, it wasn't the Goodyear blimp. Before it was the Goodyear blimp, it was the Witness blimp. You remember that chocolate brand? I don't know if you got this in New Zealand. There was this chocolate brand, you'd have a Witness...
Whitman's sampler. So
the Whitman sampler. Anyway,
we're all over across the map. Whitaker's or Whitman's?
I don't know
because they're both real things, but they are also different things.
I think it was what was the second one you said?
All I could see in my head, it's like a yellow basket kind of pattern with green like a cursive font. And my problem here is that a chocolate company can afford a blimp.
Well, and they would hover above the primary school. So as children, we would run to the Oval thinking that they were going to shower us with chocolate.
Which would kill you, drop from that, right? Yeah.
But they never did. But we were always so excited when we saw the blimp.
This blimp was so much less jolly, but it's such a beautiful memory of an airship.
Well, thank you. Well, you are here now, though. Tragedy's brought you.
I am. And I'm not encumbered by my dastardly crew members, which is great.
You know what? Screw them. I'm glad they're dead. But are you a fan of food?
Tegan, I love food.
Yay.
I love food. I love unpretentious food. This is a big, I think, point of contention between my wife and I. It's not contentious per se, but it is certainly a point of difference. My beautiful wife, Zoe, she enjoys, it's really only in food. She's very stylish, but she also enjoys sort of the finer things in food. She loves I'm trying to pick, like, from my stupid brain that likes simple food, examples of fancy foods. They're not even there. They're not even there to reference for someone else's taste in food. What do fancy people eat? I don't know, some triple chocolate dip donut? Is that fancy?
Would she go in for a platter of oysters? I always find that that's one of the big
100%.
Lines between. Yeah, okay.
Yes. And in fact, I've got a fun anecdote around seafood. Great. For the two of us.
Right.
So, and this ties neatly into the travel motif as well. So I had always wanted to go to Japan since a boy. Just fascinated by the country. Clearly Japan, a place with everything. Beautiful history, sort of feudal past, still captured with these amazing castles and culture that's been frozen in time. And then the future as well. Robots, technology, neon signs everywhere, and everything in between. And Zoe and I went to Japan over a Valentine's Day about 3 years into our relationship. And the fact that she did not connect the dots and realize I was going to propose to her, I don't know. She's a smart woman. I don't know how that didn't even cross her mind. But when we were in Kyoto, I popped the question and had booked us into the only Michelin star restaurant I've ever been to in my life. Huh. And we had a 10-course degustation seafood menu that made me feel violently ill.
Is this meal pre, like immediately pre-proposal or post-proposal?
Post. This is a celebratory dinner.
Yeah. Okay.
I ask, was it the food on the menu that made you feel ill, or was it trying to get 10 courses in? Because I have had to stop with the whole degustation thing. I know it's cool. I know it's a bit fancy.
You get spewy.
But I get spewy. Yeah. It's like after 3 courses, my belly goes, well, that was dinner.
But you keep it. You've got to keep
eating. On top of that.
Yeah.
It's just this horrible compactor machine of unhappiness.
Yeah, it's like Dante's levels of hell. You have to keep descending. So,
Tegan, imagine that kind of pressure, but you're in the first Michelin star restaurant of your damn life. Like, yeah. That is a lot of pressure to get to the end.
And I think the biggest problem with the degustation situation is that the dessert is last, as happens in meals. But by that stage, you are so sick and so full that you don't get to enjoy what is probably the best course of the whole thing. And I find that a tragedy.
It really is. It should go amuse-bouche, entree, whatever the other one is.
Yes.
One of the mains, a dessert, then like 3 other mains, then another little dessert, then 2 more mains, your real dessert. Just like palate cleansers, you know?
Yeah, yes. It's like with a mixtape, you always want like the Christmas carol halfway through, not always at the end. Is that how you guys make mixtapes?
I really thought you were going down a track of like a hip-hop record and you're saying, you know, you want like a comedy sketch about after every second or third track. Went in a completely the whiter direction by far.
Yeah, man. When you finish like 13, you know, like you finish some Godspeed, You Black Emperor, and then you just round it up with Jingle Bells, really fucks with people. But, you know, let's keep those stomach acids boiling. So, oh, hang on.
Keep them on their toes.
How badly off the rails did this degustation go for you guys?
It was just me. Zoe went through it like a champion, but it was because it was so sort of like fancy and decadent. It was a lot of uncooked, incredibly fresh fish, which I'm totally down to, you know, I'll mess with a sushimi, throw it at me. I enjoy fish. I love fish. But when you're up to your third different version of roe, it's very rich for a man with uncomplicated tastes such as myself.
When you say uncomplicated, what do you mean? Were you raised, like, is this peasant food you're seeking? Like, just hearty, like, you know, humble fare that is served in a wooden bowl fashioned by hand? Or are you just saying you just like meat and 3 veg? Like, what do you mean when you say you have unpretentious taste?
I'm a man of the people. I'm a socialist at heart, and I love a Mickey D's. You know, like if you were to go, what do you want for lunch? I try to avoid it for sort of, you know, slightly ethical, moral reasons, but I am an absolute sucker for Mickey D's.
Really? So, all right, you're going through the drive-thru. What are you... Because the last time we had Macca's, we were on the way to my parents' place, and it's that far away, it kind of needs a stop along the drive.
Yeah.
And we just went, you know what? Let's do it. Let's grab Macca's. And I didn't love. It wasn't the unhealthy thing. I just didn't love what I ordered. Maybe I'm ordering the wrong thing. What's good at Macca's these days?
Tegan, you can't set that up and not tell me what you ordered. I've got to hear how you messed this
up. You're absolutely right. I got some nuggies, chicky nuggies. I got fries. Mm-hmm. And then I got a chocolate sundae.
Yeah, that's a pretty solid order.
Thank you.
I mean, I love a burger, so I'll get a Big Mac combo, medium. But here is the key. Don't get a soda. Don't get a Coke. Don't get a Sprite. Don't get Fanta, whatever's on offer to you. Switch it out for a water, because it's that super sugary drink that's going to put you over the edge and make you feel like crap. Your body can handle quite a lot more salt than you think. It's actually the sugar that's going to really ruin your day. So if you switch that out for a water, you're good.
So it's about you pushing yourself to that edge. It's about getting to that edge and then just pulling back right before you vom. See, maybe this is the line that you weren't walking when you went for the degustation.
You're talking like, no, you guys are talking like people going for Tough Mudder or CrossFit. Like, no, you just got to push through it. You just got to, when your organs start hurting, that's how you know you're going well.
I enjoy McDonald's. I unironically very much enjoy McDonald's. And, you know, as a value-oriented person, some would say tight with money.
Yeah.
I wouldn't describe myself that way. You know, there is an undeniable value to getting the very worst bits of a cow in a blender, dyeing that, salting that, and then calling it a beef patty. That saves money.
Yeah, you think what you're doing is eating the chipboard equivalent of beef is a... I know judgment because there is something really special about getting a fucking Happy Meal. Like, the only reason I ever saw Indiana Jones was because it came in a cardboard sleeve for $5 with a Happy Meal back in the 90s.
Did it really?
Yeah, and the first one I saw was Temple of Doom. Now, that's the bad place to start in that franchise. That's the filling in a good film sandwich. That's the manky filling in a good film sandwich, right?
Or the Coca-Cola and a Big Mac combo, if you will.
Oh, sure. But as you mentioned, it's better to get water, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Switch it out.
But you're a slim guy. Like, you're a slight man of the people. How do you maintain your svelte figure?
I almost don't exist. That's my body type. And I've got nothing else to attribute that to apart from genes, genuinely, which is so unfair. I know that our modern culture in the West really celebrates the slender gent and gentess. And I think it's stupid because, A, it's not exactly a sign of health. And B, I didn't earn this. I didn't do anything for this. It's purely just a genetic thing.
So what are your insides looking like after, you know, years of nut but people's food?
It's a great question because I have heard about this phenomenon of being sort of fat on the inside where you sort of have quite a slender, you know, form.
Yeah.
But then those arteries, man, they're not looking good. The outsides do not match the insides.
Can I ask you, so you love a bit of Mickey D's and we're not going to judge, except that we are, but we're not.
You should and you can.
Good. Good. When you're at home, though, are you ever the chef? And if you are the chef, what are you? Are you cooking homemade burgers, or, you know, what's happening if you're in the kitchen?
I enjoy cooking. I enjoy cooking a lot, and that's why MasterChef is anathema to everything I believe about cooking, because I really use cooking dinner to unwind at the end of a day. I like to be able to take my time and just sort of see what's in the fridge and assemble something with these ingredients. And thrusting that into this hyper-produced competitive environment where there's people yelling at you, judgments constantly, a stopwatch hanging over you like a sword of Damocles. It's like the opposite of how I do my cooking.
Mm.
I like to kind of marinate in it a bit. Now, I don't know like a ton of recipes and I'm not a super fancy dude, but what I do pretty solid versions of. I can crack out a spaghetti bolognese like no one's business. I'm a good roaster. I really can nail a roast.
That's not nothing. That's actually really hard to do.
It's easy to fuck up a roast. How do you do your taties?
So my mum taught me this. You boil the ever-loving crap out of them first. I'm talking like 25 minutes on max temperature in the water. And then you drain all the water out. And then it's kind of tricky to do, especially if the pot's really heavy. But you keep the lid on the pot and you kind of wail on the potatoes, so you sort of wave it around and force it down really quickly, because what you're trying to do is smash those now very soft boiled potatoes and it aerates them.
Yeah.
And if you do that and then salt them upright and put enough olive oil on them, they get so crispy.
They're super fluffy on the inside, but that proper crunch on the outside. I really like your method, and I think I've been underboiling the potatoes in the lead up.
I agree, but I'm now sitting here going, Tim, all right, now, if you had to run a 10-course Michelin star, like a Michelin restaurant, right? So you have to come up, you have to build a menu of 10 dishes, right? And the whole theme is, it's just chill, but it's Michelin star. So would you put the taties in the lineup? And if so, could you pad out with another 9 dishes that menu?
On the spot right now?
Yeah, fuck it. In fact, if you want, pivot and do a sweet and savory version of existing dishes. Like, we're not fussy here.
Are you doing that thing? You know how they've made fancy versions of Arnott's biscuits. Are you talking about that when you're pimp it up a bit?
Like, you're like a Heston Blumenthal. Like, you fucking hook us Hesto's pesto. I don't care. Just do whatever you want.
To get to 10 courses, I'm probably going to be like grabbing any dish I remotely know how to make and assembling it into one Franken degustation.
100%. But yeah, let's start with what's your entree.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Oozbush should be in there because it's fun to say and it pads out one of the 10 rounds with its own distinct name. So for an Oozbush, I am going to prepare for you. sounds wild. Yep. Dehydrated bananas.
Now, are those? Do you mean those like banana chips that they give you when they won't give you chocolate at primary school? Like those little discs?
You got it. Yeah.
Huh. Tegan looks really confused. You haven't had those?
I have had them. I mean, I wasn't expecting that as our amuse-bouche.
Nothing says amuse-bouche like desiccant.
But I did. I actually always really enjoyed them.
Right.
I think they're really great.
So is this like a... Now, just to be clear, Tim, is this like a bougie version or have you just opened a packet and whacked them into a ramekin?
Are you dehydrating your own bananas? Is that what you're telling us?
Well, you know what? I am. But the end result is the same. I've done it, so I can claim to have cooked it. Yeah.
Right.
This is my work. But the end result is indistinguishable from school lunch, plastic bag, dehydrated banana chips.
One may even ask why you would even bother if it is completely indistinguishable.
One might. Okay. But as we all know, it's not the destination. It's the journey 100%. That's important.
All right. So we're forging on to what's the second? This is going to get weird if we keep going at this rate. But what's your second dish?
You, Paul. 10 courses. You've not done this with any other guest.
No, I just wanted to see if Tim could recreate that meal, but do it in a way that maybe wouldn't make him feel so sick. He's on his special day.
Okay.
Mee Goreng noodles. Specifically, Indomie Goreng noodles. That's the brand name.
Yeah. Okay.
I think they're very popular the world over. So I'm pretty sure everyone knows what I'm talking about. And I don't think it even needs any further explanation. Here's the secret to doing it right. You chuck an egg in there and you don't want to put too much water in so that you can that juice, that sauce at the end, it's actually quite good.
This is like salt, fat, acid, heat, but it's...
Well, do you know the thing is, both of those courses I would happily eat. 100%. So far, this is you know, a very, very enjoyable degustation.
All right, what do you got for us next?
Chicken.
Chicken.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to separate out the bits of the roast to get to the 10. So the first bit is chicken, a roast chicken, a beautiful roast chicken.
Yeah,
and here's how you do a roast chicken properly, folks. Speaking as a proper roast master, you've got to get that oven to 180 degrees. Truly, I know the recipe book tells you that every time, but if you go hotter than that, it's going to dry out too quickly. And if you go cooler than that, it's not going to quite work. So you want to get it in the oven at 180, but then you actually, as soon as it's in there and the door's closed, you want to crank it down to 140. And you want to keep it in there for...
140? You're bringing it down to 140?
Yeah, but you've got to have a good oven for this. That's the thing, so the heat doesn't dissipate too quickly. Mm. My uncle, do you know what? I'll go with my uncle's method. My uncle's a way better cook than me. I've only pulled this off once because I was in someone else's house with a great oven. You put the oven to the max. Bake like 320, whatever that dial goes to, put it to that. You put the chicken in and then you turn the oven off.
Whoa.
And there is like a temperature gradient that the meat goes through where it just cooks it to perfection.
What?
But it does take a while. But it means that you can do it in the morning and then go to work and come home and you've got a perfect roast protein for you.
That's amazing.
That'd be like me going to Melbourne Airport, driving a Cessna, like flying a Cessna straight up, aiming roughly in your direction over in New Zealand, turning the motor off and just landing like a perfect triangle.
People do it all the time.
I mean, you've got to know your oven. I think that you're absolutely right. Yeah. You've got to have a really good oven. And I'm only really beginning to care about that as I embark on this journey of trying to create bread, trying to bake bread, is that... Yeah, it's all about how hot you can actually really get your oven as opposed to what it says on the little dial. But that's a fascinating method. I'd be curious to know, you're not going to have any problems with the chicken if you've blasted it at 320 or whatever it is. Yeah, fascinating.
Huh, okay. So how many courses are you getting out of this roast chicken? Four? Three, four?
Or the chicken's one.
Or is okay, so just the third course is a chicken.
Yeah.
Oh, great. See, okay.
I was thinking if you really wanted to be cheeky, you could give us like the wings for one course, the breasts for one. No, no, okay. So you're not taking the
You boost. Built this, Paul. You built this. And I'm just, I'm following instructions.
Oh, my God.
Course number four.
Go on.
The aforementioned potatoes. Don't need much more than that. There's a bit of rosemary in there. Mm-hmm. There's a little sprinkling of thyme. We've salted it up the wazoo. You've heard about my boil and smash method that I got from Ma. They're good to go.
Great.
That's a great course.
Great, okay.
Five, caramelized carrots. I've attempted it many times, only pulled it off once. I had an ex-girlfriend who was very good at caramelized carrots, and I will give it a go because I'm an ambitious person. Now, I've got to chuck a dessert in there at this point because I said that's what all degustation menus needed. So what are we up to now? Six is an ice cream sandwich. All the texture of a sandwich, but cold and creamy.
Okay, what's the kind of outside part and what's the filling?
It's normal, man. You know how you get those pink wafers that says ice cream sandwich? It's those. And you know how you get those ice cream slices that says ice cream sandwich?
Oh, God.
Fucking put it together, man. That's the course.
You're overthinking it, Paul. You're overthinking it.
I'm overthinking it because I'm not used to eating in a prison commissary. But yeah, this is great. So are we talking one pink, one white, two pink?
Yeah. Have you never seen one of these, Paul? It goes pink, white, pink. That's what a sandwich is.
I'm sorry. And are you going to give... Hang on. You have to give the guy in the tuxedo with the monocle, you give him the wafers on a plate. There you go. And you give him the brick of ice cream in that kind of wax paper and he has to rip it open himself, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's called a deconstructed ice cream sandwich.
Great.
Yeah. This takes us to seven.
Seven? Yep. Lucky number seven, it's crispy Thai chili fish, which seems slightly decadent after the chicken's already there. But I just love this dish so much. When you just get a big snapper and you just put like chili and coriander and spring onions all through it, because you just like the hard work is the marinating and you're not doing that. The fridge is. So you just make this very simple mix up with all the herbs. You put the fish in the fridge for 3 hours. You take it out. It takes what, like 30 minutes to fry out properly.
Sure.
And you've got this fresh, beautiful spice, like the chili cuts through the fat of the fish. It's just a good time.
Right.
See, I'm so concerned because after eating the banana chips, the chicken, the mee goreng, everything else, I know that by this stage...
My taste buds have whiplash.
Well, not only that, but I know I'm feeling vomiting, right? And so all I could picture in my head is that I've eaten this ice cream sandwich and I'm having the dairy voms. You know when you've got dairy that wants to come back up?
Sure.
Now you've put at the table in front of me a whole fish.
Big squeeze of lemon. The citrus is starting to curdle the ice cream in your stomach.
And it's looking at me. It's the fish. I can just see it looking at me.
Oh, he's not taking the eyes out at this point, no.
Well, good news for you, Tegan, because for the eighth course, we're back to dessert. But this time we've gone down a gear and it's a sorbet.
Nice.
So this is a true kind of palate cleansery. Let's reset everything. Let's cool off the temperature a bit. Let's reset the taste buds. So we've got a selection of three different kinds of sorbet. One is raspberry. One is lemon. And one
is antacid.
Is lime.
Great.
I genuinely don't know a third kind of sorbet. What other kinds of sorbet can you get?
Always do pistachio third. Right. It's always, because I never eat the pistachio, it's always, all the time there's a goddamn pistachio sorbet.
Yeah.
Lovely. Okay, and that brings us to our 10th course.
Yes.
Ninth or 10th?
I've lost count.
I think it's ninth. And you better believe that for the ninth course, we are having a toasty, a classic of the New Zealand and Australian kitchen.
Great.
Get a look. Paul looks visibly so disturbed by the suggestion of the penultimate course.
No, Tim, I'm just used to people going, so what are the thematic links between them? There's no link, is there? What's the sinew tying these dishes together?
Excuse me. I think I laid it out at the start. I am an unpretentious eater. I enjoy big, blocky flavors. I enjoy fun. And I'm having fun. I'm having fun in a safe way. I'm not overextending myself in a MasterChef challenge where I have to recreate some, guy who's been for 30 years constructing these delicacies in the... It's a chocolate fountain in the shape of a woman and I don't know. It's not about that. It's about coupling mee goreng with an ice cream sandwich. And it does kind of make a kind of sense. I would eat this stuff. And I would eat it in this order.
Good. Okay.
You're gonna have to. But what's the?
Well, no. What's in the toasty?
Oh yes, of course.
Cheese, ham, tomato. Cheese, ham, tomato.
Yep, thank you, and thank you for putting the tomato in. I appreciate that because that's apparently contentious, and I think you need it scalds your mouth, and I'll accept that. But
yeah,
you need
does.
The little bit of sweetness in there.
Is there any kind of? Are we going fancy bread or just Wonder White? Like just bung.
We actually are going fancy on this one, Paul, which might shock you. Yeah, we've got a little sourdough from a local patisserie, and you just want to lightly butter that with some unsalted butter, don't ask me why, and then whack that in the toasty maker.
All right. Well, look, you've just eaten a toasty. You're very full. You're confused. You can't see straight, but there's one...
You're confused. I'm golden.
Hey, you're fine. You're in the kitchen. You're working from some sort of dais for some reason, and there's dramatic lighting. But there's one more dish, yes. Tegan, that we have to eat from Tim's degustation. Do you have room?
I don't. I clearly don't have room. I lost all room after the whole chicken.
I can't.
I'm not Elwood Blues, but
yeah.
I am going to push on to course number 10.
Okay.
I've got bad news. And like, I kind of want to stress something at this point before I reveal what the 10th part of the degustation menu is. This is, look, we're having a good time. We're having fun here. I'm not telling you these courses for lols. This isn't for laughs. This is how I live my life, okay?
10 meals a day.
This is a bit of me. This is me putting myself out into the world, opening up and being honest.
All right. No, I appreciate that. Thank you.
The 10th component to this degustation menu is a sort of a Mortal Kombat finishing move, a sort of culinary fatality, is a deep fried Moro bar, because it's like a delicacy of the underclass, you know, because it's like... kind of complicated. It takes a little bit of equipment to actually do it correctly, which is the fish and chip shop. It's often off book, but possible. And when done correctly, it has this incredible combination of textures and flavors that will set you back about $4 in total.
Now, is a Moro bar like a Mars bar?
Yeah, we'll go with a Mars bar, shall we? Probably a bit more universal.
Yeah, the deep fried Mars bar is I know that it's a big thing in Edinburgh, I believe.
One. I've had a snack sized deep fried Mars bar. It did this amazing thing where basically the batter is crispy, the inside liquefies, and then I think we were mopping it up with basically some sort of like whipped cream. It was It was fantastic. It was truly fantastic. I couldn't eat more than one, but if you whack a snack sized deep fried Mars bar at the end of that meal, I'd die shortly afterwards, but it'd be very grateful.
It'd be a great death.
Oh, yeah. A beautiful death. A better death than your three crewmates suffered recently.
R.I.P., but they had it coming. You've got like a lightly melted bit of marshmallow layer and like warm caramel and chocolate, but a crisp, savory batter on top of that. That's unbeatable.
Do you reckon you could, if you're going for the savory sweet thing, do you reckon you could whack one of those in some mayo, or is that suicidal?
No.
Jeez. It seems, game recognized game. That sounds insane to me. I don't know who in their right mind would add, what is it? Olive oil and egg white to that particular concoction.
Chocolate. The combination of sweet and savory is interesting. I was at Max Brenner a couple of years back, and they had a cornflake and pepper chocolate, which shouldn't work, but it was...
Oh, I can kind of see that working. Yeah, I can kind of see that working. Mm. I like a bit of, sweet and savory mixed. I don't know if I'm going to go dipping my deep-fried Mars bar or Moro bar into mayonnaise, though. But you're a strange dipper, Paul. Tim, when I first met Paul quite a few years ago, he, very early on in the relationship, I mean, maybe after the second or third date, he was at my house. I was still living with this guy called Nato, so I had my cool housemate hanging around. And Paul, just apropos of nothing really, asked if he could dip Vita-Wheat crackers.
No, it was water crackers.
Water crackers into salad dressing.
Yep.
And you had zero shame. You just walked to the fridge and got some salad dressing
I said, do you have anything to eat? And you said, oh, we got some water crackers. And I just whipped out some Paul Newman's own. Gave it a shake, whacked it in like a little ramekin that you would put like a crumble in or something, and just filled it up by about.
Tegan, what did you think of this minute? This is very bold
it's
behavior.
It's really bold. There were so many things back then that when I really dissect them, I don't know how I have a ring on my finger right now, but I do. And on our very first date, you rocked up to the date wearing a Totoro onesie. That's what you chose to wear for our first ever date.
Now, to be fair, we were going to look at Christmas lights, and I said, do you want to wear a onesie? And you were wearing this like svelte, like 1970s ABBA floral thing, and I looked like a man with a fetish. Like I had a tail. But, you know, I just think it's the same with food. You should not hide what you like, right? Like, you waltzed into this island talking about your love for Mickey D's, and we're not going to shame you for that. You know, chase your bliss.
Well, what is, I mean, other than the McDonald's, do you have a food thing that you like? I'm not talking fetishes here, people. But do you have a thing, Tim, that, you know, is is a bit strange or a bit weird, but you just really like eating it and it makes you happy, and that's that.
Oh, Tegan, I don't know if I do. I don't know if I do. Nothing is immediately coming to mind. I actually, in terms of like eating and diet and that sort of thing, I went vegan for six months
right.
kind of recently, like about a year ago, and I do want to get back to it. I think it's important. I think we all need to, at a minimum, cut down on our meat consumption. Mm. And it would be good to get to vegetarian. And I think if I can kind of, this is why I picked the crispy Thai chili fish meal. I always had this feeling that if I can get comfortable enough with like herbs and spices, I'll be fine.
Oh, like you could season anything is what you're saying.
Yeah. Really become a master of, you know, when to use paprika appropriately. You know what I'm saying?
Using it to get away from the police is a very appropriate use of paprika. You can just whack some of that. That smoked stuff will leave a lasting burn.
Very true. And especially if I'm doing that in the wake of letting a bunch of battery-kept pigs, you know, that were suffering a horrible life, pent up somewhere. If I'm freeing them and then the cops are coming against me as an eco-terrorist and I'm like, paprika, bitch. Like, that's an appropriate use of the spice, isn't it?
Good catchphrase. I mean, you'll be known across, like, it's like the Wet Bandits. You want to leave a calling card. Right?
Paprika bitch.
Yeah, paprika bitch.
Yeah, it's good.
Paprika bitch.
It's funny, we didn't go full vegan, we went vegetarian for quite a while. That was last year, I think.
Yeah.
And we'd geared up for it because it was going to be such a big thing in our life. And then we started eating vegetarian meals and it was so easy and so lovely. Mm,
yeah.
And all the recipes were so amazing. Yeah, it was strangely simple.
Yeah.
But we did this because we had a friend point out that it's not necessarily about cutting everything out, or you don't necessarily have to go full vegan, but if you just commit to eating less meat and actually actively commit to that, if everybody did that, we'd already be in such a better place.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that was kind of my intention with it. There's a great, I'm probably going to mangle it because I always do with these sort of proverbs when the wording's really important, but it's like it's far more useful to get 100% of the people making a 1% change than 1% of the people making 100% change to their diet. And so that was kind of the whole reason I went vegan, because I used to eat so much meat. Like, I would genuinely eat meat as part of every meal. Like, I'd have bacon for breakfast and like, you know, a big burger eater, love burgers. So just beef, chicken all the time. And so me going vegan was forcing myself to kind of introduce myself to a whole food world of things that didn't involve animal products, just to go, see, man, it's out there. You're going to find a couple tasty things that you can make, you know, very easily.
Well, by that rationale, I'm really interested to hear whether your desert island dish, which is the dish you have to eat every day for the rest of your life on this island, is vegan, whether it is a commitment to those values or whether you've just gone just for comfort food, whether you've gone for just a hamburger.
What I'm bringing is Kurn, is how I pronounce it. It's not how you say it, but it's corn spelled Q-U-O-R-N. And I hope that this podcast is okay with brand names, because it is like a sort of trademarked food item.
I've got no idea what this is. Is it a chippy?
Is it like a vegan mince? Am I getting that right?
It is. Yes, it is. So the version that I could do the mince, because I can make a lot of different things from the mince, but there's another one which is pieces, and it's like, sounds gross, cubes of this stuff. So what they've done is they've found this way to process corn protein in a particular way, these food scientists have, so that it really does sort of have a texture and taste like meat. So this is a perfect marrying of my love of things like chicken and low quality beef patties, but also the ethics of eating vegan, because they are vegan foodstuff. And also my love of technology, because I'm a massive nerd. This is a food item which has only been possible for the last few years because of advances in food.
So what are you cooking these grey cubes into?
It might be what I cooked this evening for my wife and I, which was a Thai green chicken curry, but just swapping the chicken bit out for these corn pieces. Let's not call them cubes. You shouldn't call anything that you're going to eat a cube. They're corn pieces.
Right, okay. Okay, and have you found, like, is there, like, a demonstrable difference? Do you have to kind of pretend?
Of course.
Sure. It's not, no, don't get me wrong. It's not as good. But
yeah.
I love this, though. You're coming to the island, and you're not only, you know, choosing something that is going to nourish and satisfy you, but you, I think, have the moral high ground. If there is a mountain on our island, I think you're at the peak because you are lording it over the rest of us who have brought some of the most, I don't know, ethically...
Dubious, yes.
Perhaps more ethically dubious food. I mean, the bag of flour is fine. But you, sir, you might just be king of the island here.
I'm making an effort. And it ticks a lot of boxes. Yeah, I've got the moral high ground. I've got the sort of idea of meat, you know, the sort of texture, the concept of meat in your head when you bite down into it. Especially, as I mentioned, if you marry it with the right herbs and spices, which I'm assuming this is a herbaceous kind of an island, right? There's a bit of foliage going on. Cool. I'll be able to scavenge some stuff up and put that together into something.
It's a Thai green chicken curry with...
Well, do you want that or do you just want the...
The cubes.
This is the trouble I'm having. Pieces, please.
Sorry,
pieces.
Because I don't want to throw a Thai green curry at you if that wasn't your dish. If it is just the ingredient in its pure, simple, uncooked form, that is fine.
Right, just the hunks of like sinew that you've sort of gathered.
Look, I will go with the ingredient if that's allowed. I don't want to violate the spirit of you know, what the rules entail on this
island.
Look,
it is a democracy on this island, by which I mean the strongest.
So the opposite of a democracy?
Yeah, what's the opposite? It's a jungle-based junta.
It's people fighting on the island.
It's terrifying. But as Tegan mentioned, not only do you have the moral high ground, we've actually given you a plot of land that is actual high ground.
You've got the high ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love
Lovely.
It.
Lovely.
From which I will reign on my very uniquely Darwinistic flavoured style of
I
democracy.
I felt this weird plop on my shoulder. I was throwing cubes again.
Not again.
See, they've got a lot of uses.
Hang on, name three.
Ammo, food, and just a breathtaking advance in science that you can look at and go, wow, we're good. Aren't we clever? Much like my 10-course degustation menu, I hope that I have brought you both sweet and sour to the palate with the story of my journey
you
to the island.
Indeed. Well, there you have it, Paul. Corn. Sweet, golden, tasteless corn. How do you feel about Tim's dish, really, now that he's not here?
I feel like I like Tim a lot more than I like his dish. And that's totally fine because not every person on the island can bring something I personally get invested in. But you know what? I think next week's guest is going to bring something that I dig personally.
All right, I have a challenge for you, Paul.
Yeah.
Usually we don't do this. And by usually, I mean we've never done this before.
Yeah.
But listeners, our guest next week is the incredible, funny, vivacious, and wonderful M. Rusciano. Now, Paul, here's my challenge. Do you think you could guess even close to the type of dish that M is going to bring to the island?
Based on her overall aesthetic, I'd say a piñata filled with sherbet.
I was going to say something with sequins on it.
It's like she's very colourful, and I hope and I suspect that she's going to bring something that really kind of brings a lot of her personality to the island.
So you're thinking what, dessert? I want you to be a bit specific because we've never guessed it correctly.
Oh, god damn it. This is really tricky because the piñata thing was a joke, but I honestly think it's going to be, yes, it's going to be sweet.
Okay.
I think it's going to be ice cream related.
That is so wild because do you know what I thought? I thought one of those Bogo standard supermarket ice cream cakes, but an expensive version of it.
I think she's going to bring a Macca's ice cream cake. Now, if she listens to this episode, you know.
It's all over. It's all over, yeah.
It's over, right? It's confirmation bias. But if she listens and goes, that's exactly what I was going to bring.
For the first time ever, though, I hope that...
No, let's incept her, all right? So let's have her listen to this kind of half asleep. And then, you know, in Inception where they plant the idea in Cillian
Don't
Murphy's
forget to follow
head?
Us on Instagram
so let's creep into
Dish
her dreams.
Island.
And
Dish
plant
Island
the idea
is
of
a proud
Macca's
member
ice cream
of the Acast Creator Network.
And then when she rocks up with it, we get to be smug.
You know what, guys? If you have an idea of what M. Rusciano will bring to Dish Island, please also hit us up on social media because I'd love to tell her what the world thinks of her in food form. Does
yeah.
that work?
Yeah. And also feel free to tell us what you think our desert island dishes would be because we would also like to know, based on food, what you think of us as people. But we cannot wait for you to hear next week's episode. We think it's going to be absolutely amazing and have a great week, everyone. We'll see you soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.